Recording in progress.
Chair Martin, it is 6 o'clock and we are recording and broadcasting.
Very good. Thank you very much. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Zoom virtual meeting for the Planning Commission for the City of Rio Grande. It is Tuesday, December 21st, 2021, and it is 6 p.m. May we have a roll call, please?
Chair Martin?
Here.
Vice Chair Shiro?
Here.
Commissioner Buchanan?
Here.
Commissioner Guthrie?
Here.
And Commissioner Maravilla?
Here.
Very good. All present and accounted for. Let's stand for the salute to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We have a fairly light agenda tonight, but I'm wondering, is there any desire or request from my fellow commissioners to make any alterations to the agenda as it's been published? Seeing none and hearing none, we will continue on. Item five is a community comment period. We typically open our Planning Commission meetings with a public comment period, inviting members of the public to present issues, thoughts, and suggestions on matters that are not scheduled on tonight's agenda. Comments should be limited to those matters that are within the jurisdiction of the Planning Commission. And members of the public may provide public comment remotely by joining the Zoom meeting, utilizing one of the methods provided by the system, raising your hand or whatever you need to do on your phone if you want to make any kind of comments. We're also asked to limit those comments to 3 minutes in order to keep the flow of the meeting moving. At this point in time, is there anybody in the public that is in line or is interested in making any kind of comments to the commission?
If any member of the public would like to comment on this, please raise your hand. If you're calling in by phone, please dial *9 to raise your hand. Chair Martin, there are no raised hands.
Very good. Thank you very much. At this point, then, I will close the public comment period at the beginning of this meeting, and we will continue on. Item six is written communications. It's a request to staff. Has the city received any communications or emails or whatever comments on items that are agendized that are not included in our packet that we need to be made aware of?
No, Chair Martin, we have not received any additional written communications.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Item seven on the consent agenda, we have a single item. It is the approval of the minutes of our December 7th meeting. I will make a motion to approve those minutes as presented. Is there a second?
Second.
Excuse me, I'd like to make one just correction. When I went and looked at it, it shows the members present. Mr. Buchanan was not able to attend the meeting last time. Is it appropriate that in the minutes that gets reflected as well?
Yes, if that's a correction that you'd like to make, we can do that.
Yeah, I think that's probably appropriate just so we have it on record. We do have five members of the commission and four were in attendance and one was not, if we don't mind making that minor change. So there's a motion and a second. Can we have a roll call, please, to approve those minutes with this one minor addition?
Chair Martin?
Aye.
Vice Chair Shiro?
Yes.
Commissioner Buchanan?
I apologize. I don't know what the protocol is here. I was not in attendance. So is a yes vote appropriate?
Certainly, legally, you are allowed to vote. In general, the typical habit is people will abstain because they were not in attendance.
All right, I will abstain then.
Commissioner Guthrie?
Yes.
And Commissioner Maravilla?
Yes.
Very good. Passes 4-0-1. We have no public hearing items tonight, and we have a single non-public hearing item. It's a review of design concepts for the pre-approved regional accessory dwelling unit plan project. Mr. Perez, I'm expecting you have a presentation for us.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Martin.
Thank you.
Good evening, Chair Martin, members of the Planning Commission. I'll be providing some background information about the project and then handing it over to our consultants who will walk you through some of our design concepts and provide more detail about the program and where it stands at this point. So as background, the cities of Arroyo Grande, Morro Bay, Grover Beach, and Atascadero obtained grant funding as co-applicants to develop this pre-approved ADU plan program. The funding was provided by the Regional Early Action Planning Grant Program, which was created with an objective to fund projects that implement housing element goals, policies, and programs. Each of the four participating cities recently adopted their housing elements, and all four have policies in those elements that encourage the construction of ADUs in order to meet their regional housing needs allocation targets. The pre-approved plan program will encourage property owners to build ADUs by making these pre-approved plans available at little to no cost, would expedite the review process, and essentially eliminates the design costs. So going back when grant funding was obtained, the city of Atascadero took the role of project lead and issued a RFP to find a consultant that'd be able to assist the cities with this project. Staff from each of the four cities interviewed the candidates and chose a team of professionals from Ryan Brockett Architecture, Meta Urban Design, and the Workbench Design Firm as consultants for this project. So tonight we are joined by Ryan Brockett, Savannah Young, and Omar Hasan from the design team, who will help explain the design process, present the concepts, floor plans, and architectural styles that have been developed thus far. So I'll hand it over to the consultants now, and they'll walk you through the rest of the project. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Andrew. We're excited to be here. This is our second go around with these presentations. We presented to City of Atascadero last week. And we actually are coming to you with a split team. We have Omar and Savannah with us. The other half of our team is concurrently presenting to City of Morro Bay right now at the exact same time. So we'll be interesting to share our feedback together. But yeah, thanks for having us. We're here to present our work to date, progress of our program, the stock regional ADU program. I'm Ryan Brockett, a local architect based in Templeton. Do a variety of residential and commercial projects really throughout the county, and have had projects in all four cities that are a part of this program, including your city as well. Alongside, as Andrew mentioned, we have Workbench, a design build firm, and Meta Urban Design, who does urban design, landscape, and also graphics too. So we pulled this team together with strengths to really tackle the entirety of this project, which is from this initial design work and working with each of the cities to develop eventually building permit sets, have it reviewed and approved through all four cities, and then adding in an educational component for residents to be able to better understand and use these moving forward. So what we're really trying to do with this program is to provide more affordability and accessibility for residents to add these additional dwellings to their properties. So we're really a collaborative team approach, and not only our team working together, but we've been meeting with the four cities on monthly coordination meetings with everybody involved on a screen like this. Sharing our work and really talking about the best needs for each of the cities, but also to work regionally as a joint program. So what you're seeing on the screen, Omar is controlling. We have a PowerPoint we'll be sharing with you, going through some of the background information, the floor plans, and then the kind of styles, exterior design, and then really talking about the next steps and getting your feedback from there. Okay, so a little bit of background information here. We, of course, Andrew introduced a little bit of this in our team. Mainly Workbench has been involved with a few other cities, Seaside, Capitola, and Milpitas on a similar type of program. they're actually steps ahead and have actually rolled this program out to the cities. So we've been working and leaning on them a little bit to help understand how the best path forward is for this type of program. Okay, so we dove into really zoning analysis for all four cities, really collecting data, looking at lot sizes, setbacks, really trying to understand and create a matrix of how each of the four cities can be combined in a way that really tries to maximize the use of the different types of lots and sizes to be able to create a program to develop six stock ADU floor plans, which each would have four options. Okay. And we're trying to, this is not a one size fit all approach. We understand that we're trying to design enough of these six variety of units that will be best utilized in each of the four cities. Some cities have smaller sites and footprints that the larger units won't fit on. Some cities have larger, larger sites that maybe the small ones won't be utilized as much. So again, we're trying to provide this variety and hoping this program would work and there would be some options for residents in each of these four places. Some of our design drivers, again, the ADU is really small dwelling, mainly in backyard or promoting efficiency, minimal circulation space, wet wall cores trying to join a lot of the plumbing together. Okay, this is also affordability as well too. Just really an efficient structure and a kit of parts of materials that are accessible and affordable to residents. Providing flexibility with interior adaptability, site adaptability, being able to rotate some of these units as far as how they are sited on the properties, knowing that each property is going to be different, how they work with the main house, existing kind of site components, and if they want to be rotated or mirrored, and how these designs will work best for all these lots. Strategic windows and openings, a privacy and outdoor space, porches and overhangs, private yards. Again, how do we work with maximizing the privacy of the main house, not knowing that some of these projects may be combined with a site that might have a family or multiple families that know each other living together or not. You know, might want to have the amount of privacy between the main house and the ADU. So we're going to start laying out here kind of how we developed the sizes, the floor plans, these kind of unit types. This graphic really shows how our analysis developed, showing that the city of Morro Bay was more apt to use some of these smaller studio units. The smaller sizes starting at 220 square feet, going all the way up to 1,000 square feet, where Atascadero was really looking at using more of the larger units. Again, your Grover Beach and then Rio Grande are kind of in the middle there. And again, that just kind of is an average perspective of how we felt that these different units would fit in these different cities. From there, we looked at ADUs that we've currently worked on, workbenches work in these other ADU programs, other stock ADUs, and tried to kind of really understand how these would fit on your sites and would be the best design moving forward. Then from here, we did our own internal team charrettes, trying to lay out different types of design parties, the bar plan, T plan, and L plan, and a block plan. And from those developed into our six floor plans, which we'll share with you. And then we'll share with you how the massing and elevations are developed from there. Okay. So I'm going to turn it over to Omar, and he's going to walk us through some of these floor plans.
Yeah. Thanks, Ryan. So on the screen in front of you is just a snapshot of the design progress so far. And these are the six units we've been developing. And as Ryan has outlined, they range in size from the efficiency, the studio, the one bedroom plus, which is a one bedroom with an additional flexible space that we'll get into in a little bit, the two bedroom and the two bedroom plus. And so without spending too much time on this slide, we'll just dive in and talk through some of the differences between these units. So the efficiency unit is the smallest unit. It was designed to fit on the most constrained of sites that could support an ADU. You can see it's a simple box, 13'4" is the dimension currently. We might want to make that a little bit nicer number at some point, but initially that's where we are. You enter on the short side of the unit, and all of your living space and kitchen is accessible from that front entry door. There's a small efficiency kitchenette, as well as a nook for a bed in the opposite corner. In this case, we were able to accommodate some small amount of living space. And then in the bathroom, there's an opportunity for a washer dryer, as well as some full height storage kind of straddled between the two. This is a full bathroom. In this case, we're showing a bathtub in all of these locations, but keep in mind, these bathtubs could be roll-in showers. They could be a variety of things that we'll accommodate as we keep moving forward through the process. And in all of these units, we're anticipating providing lofted storage above the bathroom cores. So whenever you see a bathroom, you can kind of envision access to storage up above that within the ceiling space up there. Next step up is a studio unit, very similar in spirit. In this case, there's a nice entry nook to provide some privacy and some opportunity for some outdoor space associated with the unit. The kitchen in this case is a little bit larger. Again, this is that wet wall core opportunity where all of our plumbing is efficiently located in one location, trying to maximize the affordability and efficiency of construction. In this case, you have a dedicated washer dryer nook on the way to the bathroom. And then the bedroom is actually in a space large enough where you could get maybe a pony wall or some kind of separation between that part of the unit and the rest. We're also showing an idea about a backdoor entry. This could be a place where people who are bringing in their bicycles, bringing in muddy shoes, some of these communities, they might be surfing. It's a place where you can maybe leave some stuff outside and come in through the back door straight into the kind of mudroom area of the home. The one bedroom unit in this case is a much larger, more potentially livable unit. You'll see similar arrangement. You enter and there's a long linear kitchen, opportunity for dining potentially, space for a living area. Here we're showing a slider door where there could be access to a backyard if there was enough space for that on the given lot. Here there's an idea about kind of a formal mudroom. This could be a layout space on top of washer dryers where you could fold laundry. This could also be stacking washer dryers with a full height closet next to it. Could also be fully enclosed if you don't want to have that mudroom appearance, and it can be just kind of a closet in a corridor. Again, full bathroom. This one's a little bit larger than a standard bathroom size to accommodate some more additional flexibility, aging in place potential, and opportunities for storage and either outdoor storage or planning for future mechanical systems, depending on the system that we decide to design. This is the one bedroom plus unit. It's 735 square feet. You'll notice the difference between the one bedroom and the one bedroom plus is this additional wing here. And in this case, we've illustrated in two fashions. It could be additional living space where you could have a really great living room, could be a den, could be an office. It could be an additional bedroom if somebody decided to go that route. And it could be all of those things, depending on how a homeowner decides to move forward with their plans. The two-bedroom unit is hitting around 900 square feet. You'll notice it's very similar to the one-bedroom with the additional bedroom located here. Again, it does have sort of a sitting area nook. This could also be an office, just a little bit more living space to accommodate two people, still one full bedroom in this case. One full bathroom in this case. Two bedrooms, one full bathroom. And then lastly, the two bedroom plus, again, similar spirit to the one bedroom plus where there's this additional wing here. In this case, we've illustrated in two fashions, one with a large living area, potential dedicated dining area. The kitchen in this case is much larger and is showing a kitchen island. This is really like a small home at this point. And showing two bedrooms here
Same wet wall core with the full bathroom and long linear kitchen. Above, we've illustrated an alternate version where there could be potentially an additional bathroom and bedroom. So you could turn this into a three-bedroom, two-bath unit. We've also illustrated versions that show a powder bath, like a half bath with just a toilet and a sink. Really, the goal is to create a lot of flexibility here within this footprint. And so this is just a summary matrix of all of those unit types, the overall square footages of each unit as modeled, and the length and width of those as is standing. Again, we'll be massaging these a little bit to get a little bit more material efficiency, a little bit more standard dimensions in our construction drawings. And then here are some of the sort of amenities in terms of how the sleeping arrangements are arranged, as well as the kitchen arrangements. And so now I'll pass it to Savannah, and she'll talk us through some of the architectural styles and exterior design.
Awesome. Thank you. So just to get started, we want to stress that we were looking at the entire Central Coast while forming these and really wanted to provide options that fit in each community. So we studied the context, and even though all the four cities are different, we tried to get an understanding to create a wide variety for these ADUs. So we created four distinct styles: the coastal ranch, the backyard craftsman, the California modern, and the beach bungalow. And each of these have defining characteristics, and we'll take you through those as we get through the exterior design. So while we were studying these, we developed the studio and the two-bedroom plus for the exterior. You can see Omar circling those, and then as we move forward, we will develop all of the exteriors for every single unit. So here on the left, you can see the studio unit, and on the right is the two-bedroom plus. And this one is the coastal ranch, so it has board and batten siding. The windows can be articulated to match the farmhouse style. It also has a gable roof with overhangs. And it's a possible opportunity for the integrated wraparound porches, which is often shown in the style. And then this one, the backyard craftsman, it has trim and ornamental detailing. It's a higher pitched roof, and it's here it's showing the shingle roof above with horizontal siding below. And then it has opportunities for the roof brackets, for differing window styles, and siding materials as well. And then the California Modern, this is a really clean and elegant solution. On the studio, it's showing the shed roof, while the two-bedroom plus has the gable roof. And then it has expansive glazing opportunities and single roof forms. And then also has a special opportunity for where the dashed line is shown for screening. And each of these screening opportunities can define the type of modern that the unit is going for, whether that's mid-century modern or contemporary modern. And then here's the beach bungalow. The studio unit on this one also has a shed, while the two-bedroom plus has that gable roof. And has a horizontal siding, simple construction to frame those beach views, and opportunities for different color siding depending on the beach town around the Central Coast. So in summary, you can see the wide-ranging aesthetics that are affected, and with such small tweaks in detailing, in siding materials, the colors and forms, and all of these have the same floor plan. So here's four versions side by side. And this one's the studio. And then here you can also see them all side by side with the two bedroom plus. And then here we created a sample style guide for a material palette, which is designed to help homeowners achieve a wide range of authentic styles with small detail and material changes. Something true to this, this is showing the beach bungalow. It can be something true to the architectural style, and you can see that there's three options shown, but they all look very different. So the homeowner can have the articulated style that they want as well. And now I'll pass it over to Ryan to talk about next steps.
All right, thanks, Savannah, Omar. So next steps, here we are presenting to each of the four cities, get feedback from you all. We're gonna meet with the cities again and the planning departments in January to kind of go over all comments. From there, we make any revisions to designs, both floor plan and exteriors. Then move forward really in design development and with a consultant team, mainly a structural engineer, to develop these six permit sets, which will then be submitted to the cities for kind of a joint plan check, review, and building approval. And then from there, we also have a kind of an educational component, graphic component that we're putting together that will accompany these sets to better explain for the residents kind of how to use them and how to move forward. All right, so thank you. And again, we appreciate any of your feedback and input, especially specific to Aurora Grande, knowing that we'll get feedback from other cities so we could all try to mesh and merge them together. And again, we're trying to provide enough variety of floor plans and exterior options that hopefully creates enough of these options to really create a higher use for residents to implement additional housing in your city. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that presentation, and thank you to the consulting design team for your work. It's got to be an interesting balancing act getting four different municipalities to, aiming at four different targets with your arrows, I guess is the way to put it. You've done some nice work, and it'll be interesting to see how this ends up progressing through the city. Are there questions from my fellow commissioners? This, I think, there's really kind of an open opportunity to make comments and ask questions. Fellow commissioner, who would like to go first with a question either to a staff or to this consulting group?
Don't be shy. I'd be happy to go first.
Go ahead, Frank.
I just want to, first of all, it looks great. I like what I see. It's challenging to try to come up with something that fits for multiple cities. I guess what I want to know first, what kind of information are you looking for from us and feedback? Are you looking for more architectural feedback on maybe finishes that aren't there that we see in our town? I guess that's what I want to make sure our feedback is pointed to what you need at this point.
Yeah, Frank, thanks. I think feedback that's specific to Rio Grande, for example, in Tascadero, we got some feedback both from the commissioners and residents pertaining to just different ideas that they thought would be used more by residents, or some of them related to design, style, materials, others related to kind of site kind of use, setbacks, sizing of the units, length, width, those type of things. But we're really open to any feedback.
Okay. Well, let me just start by saying the one thing that I noticed just from a design and finish standpoint in Aurora Grande, the neighborhood I live in, probably 80% of our homes here are Spanish tile roofs. And so if someone wanted to match their ADU to their current home, they would have to add that. So I guess that begs the question, how flexible to add a material that maybe none of us come up with? How would that process work? Would it still be expedited if they decided, okay, we'd like to put Spanish tile on the beach bungalow or something like that?
Yeah, that is, that's a great point. It's funny, when we started this program and looked at trying to narrow down the six floor plans in four styles, one style, the Spanish or the mission style, was one that was eliminated by the four cities saying it would be used least. But that said, we know that we're aware that there's all different styles throughout Central Coast. It's really something that I think we're going to talk with the cities more and really the building departments on how they want to handle more of that kind of permitting and revisions. Because the floor plans and the structure and window sizes, you know, those will accommodate a variety of kind of materials and styles and things that could be fairly easily revised. So it may be up to the cities of how they want us to maybe add some notation to the plan set, if they want to add some other kind of sheet or application that would describe a revision that the resident would fill out. But I think the idea is that there could and should be some flexibility with the program to best kind of work with and match existing residential styles.
Okay. I think just from my perspective, you know, I'm most concerned, as much as I obviously I want everything, we want our towns to look good, we want our buildings to look good. People have individual styles and needs of what they think looks good and would look best with their current home. But from my perspective, the most important thing is that this actually expedites the process, that in when it's all said and done, the person who you know, who decides to choose this route gets you know, something that they like, but the process is just shrunk in time and obviously cost. Obviously, eliminating design costs is a great thing to have it pre-done. But I think that's the thing that I don't know, and by what I've read, I'm not sure, you know, how each city's planning on, you know, implementing this and what the whole goal is in time. And I don't know if you guys have any feedback on that, or if you're just involved in the design and you're going to let the city powers that be deal with the time in the permitting process.
I mean, you're right. I mean, in essence, this will be a pre-approved stock ADU program. The idea that these plans will be sitting at the building department counters, a client resident could come in and choose their plan, pay their fee, add different notations as needed, as required for kind of site plan, and other items that the cities will want to add to this that we haven't necessarily gotten to that point yet. But then they would pay their fee, they'd have a permit, a pre-approved project, and from there they would hire their contractor and start moving forward. And you're right, eliminate the kind of front-end design team cost schedule, but also the schedule that involves city plan check and review, which also alleviates some burden on your own building departments too, that backlog of projects.
Sure. And that's, you know, that's been, I know that there have been a lot of efforts in various cities to expedite the permit process and the length of time from when I go in. Correct. With my idea, when I come out. And so far, and I don't want to throw anybody under the bus here, but so far, as a general contractor who builds and works in multiple cities in our county, it hasn't been real fruitful. It's right. Been a lot of talk. It's been a lot of even effort. And the results, when it comes right down to it, not necessarily any one person's fault, but we're still dealing with really long backlogs in time that frustrates a lot of clients. Right. So anything that like this, you know, I'm looking at as a positive for our city. And obviously ADUs, with the housing crisis that we do have in the state of California, you guys are doing something that we all need very much. So I'm pleased with that. I'd like to see how it all plays out. But from what I've seen, from what the work that you've done, in my opinion, the tile roof in our area would probably be well received to have that as an option. The other thing that's maybe not quite as popular, but been seen a lot more, is reclaim siding. and just from an environmental standpoint, and from a rustic agrarian style that is kind of a signature of Rio Grande, and I've used it in some of the restaurant designs that we've done. People seem to like that. I don't know how that would fit in, you know, and those are my comments and questions, but good work, really solid work.
If I can piggyback off of that, my thinking is, and this is more of a comment, I think as this process gets fleshed out over time, and I agree quite a bit with Frank and what he's trying to say, is that there's almost an expectation that there's still going to be some design work, because there are an awful lot of backyards and sites that may not be flat. And so, you know, the foundations that need to be constructed are going to be customized to the site. And, you know, I can certainly believe that I can walk in, because I want to build an ADU in my backyard. You know, I don't want a comp shingle roof. I want a tile roof. And some of those things are fairly easy to provide. And so I see the opportunity for a tremendous amount of flexibility. But at some point, I'm either going to be an owner builder, or the city is going to expect an architect of some kind to be involved in order to provide that kind of customized design work that can get signed off and permitted. And so the more meat that is on these designs, these generic designs, is going to be very, very helpful, because I still see, in all likelihood, an architectural involvement in order to get these things customized on these specific sites. And there's not an easy way to get around that, and I'm not looking for a lot of discussion or reaction, because I think what you guys are doing is two steps earlier in this whole process than all that stuff. But just a comment as this gets fleshed out, that in order to facilitate, you know, a faster approval and a you know, shorter lead time and stuff, that how do we accommodate that? And how does the homeowner, if they're walking into City Hall and saying, I want to build an ADU, what do I need to do? That these steps are really being included and are just not, you know, not overlooked. But you guys haven't done that yet, and I understand that, but I agree, you've done a great job. I like the flexibility, but if I want to put a tile roof, there's no doubt that I could probably put a tile roof on that ADU in my backyard. Thank you. Other comments?
Chair Martin, if I may jump in real quick.
Sure.
With a comment from staff about the process. So what we envision is, once we get these pre-approved plans on file at City Hall, what our expectation from the property owner would be a site plan, some basic property information about what's there right now. And they'll need to show us where the ADU is going to be sited, setbacks, you know, distance from existing structures. And it'd be pretty much a minor zoning review to get that permit issued. So I think, you know, what we envision would really expedite the process. And with regards to, you know, education, we will create a webpage or expand our existing webpage that explains this process and sets expectations for property owners and addresses, you know, unique situations in which there's slopes or unique soils might be in the floodplain. So people aren't alarmed when certain situations arise and need ask for more information.
Very good. Thank you.
If I could also add from the workbench experience on the Seaside ADU program, the first sheet, the cover sheet, will have a list of the drawings provided, as well as sort of a checklist of what the homeowner needs to provide in addition to the construction document set. And the work that Meta Urban Design will be doing is the informational side. So there will be a lot of materials to guide homeowners through the process. And then once you get that drawing set, there should be a checklist that says, here's all the drawings you need. What we need from you is a site plan. What we need from you is a foundation drawing if you're in a challenging site condition. And granted, some sites are going to require some amount of customizability that will cost some money. But the hope is that majority of sites will be able to use these with relatively low cost.
You guys know if there's a stormwater plan that you'll have to, and that becomes an issue sometimes with development. With buildings this small, is that an issue, or will that be one of the requirements?
Vice Chair Shiro, I can handle that question. Sure. If there's less than 2,500 square feet of new or replaced impervious surfaces, then the project would be exempt from stormwater requirements.
Thank God.
That's definitely a positive.
Another wrinkle is this new state law about splitting or splittability of these SFR lots. And so, on that checklist, Omar, as you're talking about, getting developed, the supply of utilities, I'm assuming most of these will end up with a separate electrical service, but getting a separate sewer line connections, a separate water service, and gas, to me, is probably the easiest and least expensive to really deal with. But identifying, sewer and water supply and service on a structure that could be eligible for a lot split in the future is it's going to take a lot more discussion in my mind and a lot more clarification. But don't forget that's not only pending, but it's here with us in the state of California. And so as we start building these 300 square foot little ADUs, at some point someone may want to split that off and make their own parcel out of that. So.
Yeah, Glenn, we talked about that a little bit in the Tascadero meeting too, having this discussion of, although this is an ADU program, essentially if somebody was enacting an SB9, this would essentially could be a small second home. I mean, it doesn't have to necessarily be called the ADU. It could be called the secondary dwelling, or
right. Once
the lot split, it would still be, could be an ADU on the other side of the property. So there's some flexibility with that. And I think that's part of this kind of consensus that each of the four building departments will have to help come to. Frank, you mentioned the stormwater. We also talk about how we deal with items such as fire sprinklers, solar, septic, gas versus electric, and trying to wrap in as much of that into our permit sets that become kind of these almost checkbox items to notify the resident if it is included, which one to check, or if it's excluded, what they have to go to add to the permit to be able to be approved.
Yeah, Mr. Guthrie.
Yeah, so I think you've answered this one question. So are they all designed with the idea that they will all have the potential to have gas included? And does that require, I mean, I'm not a builder or an architect, wouldn't that just require a whole nother set of plans? I guess that's kind of a general question with all of the design changes. I mean, in one of them, you're putting in a second bathroom. In my mind, anyway, that's clearly a seventh design, the seventh set of plan. I guess, so is the idea that you would just check a box and say, we're going to have gas? Wouldn't you have to locate the gas on all of the plans and where it's going to be and where the vents are going to be? So that's another set of plans. And similarly with, I just assumed they were all slab. Didn't even occur to me that they wouldn't be slab if they're going to be affordable. That's a whole nother, clearly another set of plans. So pretty soon you're up to 100 sets of plans. I mean, you talk about, you just check a box, but it's a whole lot more than just checking a box, even for solar, just having this space for a solar controller, whatever they call them. So I guess my concern is that in order to keep the process functional without it being, okay, yeah, you've got 90% of it, but the other 10% requires that you go out and get an architect anyway, that maybe maybe this isn't just going to be for every situation, that if you've got a slope lot, this isn't going to work for you. If you want to do maybe the second bathroom, maybe that's the seventh design, but I'm really concerned that we're going to have so many options out here. I recognize the outside of the building, that's probably relatively simple as long as, you can clad it however you want, but these 100 things we've already qualified, that's a checkbox. Or maybe it's windows, maybe it's two types of windows, but pretty soon you get into, I want to use, this other kind of window. Even if it's the exact same size, does it still meet all the structural rules? Again, I don't know. So I'm concerned that we're making it so, even putting tile roof, at least as I understand it, requires a much stronger roof because of the weight. maybe on these smaller structures it doesn't matter. But again, I'm not a builder, but I'm really concerned that we're looking at 150 or 100 sets of plans up here, because you've already got 24 sets without any changes. So it's more than, it sounds to me like it's more than just checking a box, and that concerns me quite a bit.
Yeah, you're right. This isn't easy to think about. We've been trying to digest this since we've started. You're right. I mean, it's our way to try to condense this as much as possible. The four elevation changes won't necessarily be a separate set of plans. They would be kind of a separate sheet in the set, you know, option A, B, C, D, those type of things built in. But you're right. It's going to be hard to get this all working as that stock plan, and knowing that these are really kind of plug and play stock ADUs. And for anything that is needing customization, is likely warranting a separate custom designed ADU project.
Yeah, I guess my input is I'd be willing to see the option shrunk quite a bit from what I'm hearing. But,
okay.
That's a good point, because I think that, you know, even in your notes, you're talking about, particularly on the larger end of the spectrum, people wanting to put in more customizable ADUs will more often require the involvement of an architect. You know, if I've got a nice big fancy house on a 2-acre lot and I want to put an ADU on the back, I'm probably not going to drop in one of these quote unquote prefab, pre-approved units. I'm going to have something that's custom designed. Yeah, do we really need 24, you know, basic designs on that short list in the city? Good point to talk about.
See, I guess to me, as a builder, if I wanted to go and just get right at it, I would want all of those boxes checked with, and Jim calls them sets of plans, but basically it's just pages. But if you have a full set with, whether it's gas or there's, you know, tile roofs or whatever, if you have a full set of plans, I can get started. But if it's vague, there's no way that the inspector wouldn't have anything to inspect. So you have to go full Monty if you're going to make it so that somebody can go in, say, I'll take that one. You've got a full set of plans, print them out, and let's walk out of here with a to-go ready to go deal. If it's pre-done, where the gas locations are, you know, going to be in the same areas, maybe they can be flipped, you know, to have some flexibility. But to me, that's a positive, not a negative, because it's when it goes down to just leaving it open, well, you're going to have to go get an architect. So then we're just not even really doing anything. That's how I'd see it.
If I could respond to that, I'm not talking about leaving it open. I'm talking about reducing the choices. I understand you want as many choices as possible, and gas maybe is not a great example, because there's only going to be one way to do it probably. But when you, for instance, with tile roof, you're the expert here, but at least in my mind, all of the walls have to be different, and the roof definitely has to be different. So it's more than just a page, you know, it's more than a page, and it's way more than a checkbox. But
well, the sheeting of the roof would be different, but the weight on something that small, to me, it wouldn't change much. I mean, it would have a different page, but it could be done in advance. So if somebody selected that, then that page would print out. I mean,
So that roof would be another set of plans.
It's another page. When you say set, to me, a set of plans is the set. I get one set of plans for this whole building. So, but I have different within that. I have a gas and plumbing plan. I have I have different pages for those plans. I'd expect there to be multiple pages in that set of plans.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
I guess.
But when you're talking about changing the pages and creating another set, granted, 80% of it's the same, 90% of it. But my point is, at some point, and I don't know, maybe there's software out there that does this. It says, hey, I want this and this and this, and it just assembles it for you. That's probably not the way this is going to work. It's going to be, there's assembly if you're doing tile roof. There's an assembly if you're doing, I don't know, whether some other kind of roof, a metal roof, who knows? So there's one, two, and we're at 100 sets of plans. You can say they're only different by a page, but it's 100 sets of plans. And okay. Maybe that's not a big deal. It sounds like a big deal to me sitting here.
Yeah.
It's a big deal for our design team for sure.
Okay.
But I guess my point is, as a builder, once, if I can walk in there and that can as that work's already been done, and I can select my finishes and the plans are assembled accordingly, I think in theory it can work. I think it kind of hasn't been done much in our state. So we're walking on, this is rarefied air, but I think it's welcome rarefied air, and I appreciate the effort.
Sure.
I'll only add that we can share through Andrew the City of Seaside set that Workbench has completed, and that should give you an idea of what that final construction document set. That was much simpler. There was one floor plan with three different exterior designs. But it'll give you an idea of how we're capturing the variation in detailing, the roof design, the different materials, all captured in one drawing set. And it's kind of up to the contractor to and the owner to decide which style they're using. And then the details are all in that one set. They just follow the details through the entire set.
But I mean, but at some level, I think that's exactly what Jim Guthrie is saying, is that if we've got, you know, if I'm Seaside and I've got the generic one that Seaside's offering as a single plan, there may be three or four different variations depending on what style roof or finishes are on the outside. But if we have 24 plans, suddenly, there's an awful lot of check boxes with customized sheets that get included in our package. And he's saying we might be wise to try to shrink that number down. We're still going to have a lot of flexibility on finishes and what it looks like. But perhaps we don't need 24 different floor plans in the final package that we're actually putting together. But
we certainly would get we'd get more sleep if that was the case. That's for sure.
I will say though, the 24 basic isn't the one I'm worried about. It's the variations of every one. Let me ask Frank, since you're kind of, so what about slab versus raised? I mean,
It's definitely
pretty fundamentally different.
Yeah, it's definitely a different plan. We started building in Sacramento, and everything we built was raised floor foundation, and then moved to the desert, and everything was slab. And now we come here, and it's kind of a little bit of both. In fact, the home I'm living in right now is actually a combo. It's more work for the design team to do that for sure. And I think we have to kind of leave that. I don't know what the budget is. You know, every time you add something, I'm sure that adds to your guys' workload. But I think you guys are going to, you know, probably have the best ability with just because of where you sit and what you're doing to see what'll be the most functional, you know, for us. And when does it get to, like Jim said, where it's just too much, you know, that he's right. There's a limit there. And we can't just it's not just about making all the planning commissioners and ARC groups happy with every potential style. The real goal here is going back to what I said at first, is that how do we expedite this? You know, if it needs to be shrunk to do it, then so be it. You know, I just started out with trying to give you some feedback of what I thought you were asking for. But
Jamie, Kevin, you've got thoughts or comments you'd like to share?
I had more of a question, I guess. I saw somewhere in there that there was like a design priority survey that went out. What was there a process of gathering input from like either contractors or people that might be living in the ADUs or building the ADUs on their property? Like, was there any input that they put into this process?
No, this was really input from each of the four cities and the kind of planning departments, and then utilizing the zoning regulations for each of those. So kind of basically trying to dive into more of the the rules and parameters of how these would fit, not necessarily the kind of the community input or aspect that way for design.
Well, okay, because I'm just, you know, for like the thing I worry about is that people will not use the plans because it doesn't fit their needs. I guess, Andrew, I guess this question's more for you. Have you guys, as the city, gone through all of these, just these initial documents and everything, and looked at the properties that might be, that, you know, we have kind of like where ADUs are going to be built in mind in the city? Does this fit with those areas and what they need, and anything that you've heard from people that are putting ADUs in their properties?
Yeah, it's a great question. So all the four cities and our planning staffs have been meeting with the consultant on a monthly basis since this design team was selected. So going back from the very beginning, looking at the lot sizes from each of the cities and based on that number, those numbers, what we thought would be most plausible in terms of unit sizes, taking into consideration setbacks, fire codes, a multitude of factors. And then based on our experience as, you know, checking plans that have been submitted for ADUs over the past few years, we landed on these unit sizes and the architectural styles that we thought would be most appropriate.
So these, what we've been presented tonight kind of conforms with plans that have already been submitted for other people?
Yeah, very close. And okay. A key factor in, I think it's the four smallest units are less than 750 square feet, which gets the property owner out of having to pay any impact fees. So that's the trigger in terms of size. So kept that in mind also in terms of designing that, you know, I think it's the one bedroom plus that's right about 730 square feet. So there's some flexibility there.
That was my only question. Thank you.
Kevin? So I'll just add, I think this looks great. Some specific points of feedback that were already kind of mentioned and addressed. I also had the idea that we might be lacking some Spanish mission style there that seems like would be a good fit for a lot of the homes I see around town. I also wonder if there's maybe some potential option to make some use of the space on the, I believe it's the shed roof units. You've got that high side there. Maybe that space can be used somehow. And then on the, just to echo the concerns about flexibility here, I think that's really important. I think the word I keep coming back to here is composability. Like, I don't know anything about how we end up delivering a set of plans to someone, whether there's something we just have on file. I also don't know completely what a set of plans looks like, so keep that in mind. But I mean, what my ideal, process here would be some more composable pieces. So yeah, maybe we don't have 150 sets of pre-approved plans, but we have, you know, 10 sets of pre-approved pieces that can be combined to maybe, you know, 150 different permutations that should all end up in a pre-approved project. So yeah, I think, whether that means we just continually are adding to plans or we break it up into small composable pre-approved pieces. But yeah, I would like to see emphasis on that flexibility portion, because if you end up still needing 10% architecture work on 80% of the projects, it kind of defeats the purpose. And I think the purpose here is, guided by the concerns around, well, how do we pre-approve 150 plans? I think that's kind of the point of what we're trying to achieve here, is we allow some flexibility. We don't need to exert so much control over ADUs in the city. So, I think what I've seen so far is already along those lines of, we can compose an ADU out of an exterior and an interior pre-approved, exterior pre-approved interior. Maybe those can be further expounded upon into the other design and structural concerns here that are, pre-approved pieces that you can just tack onto your plans. Those are just my thoughts. I think that's all I had.
Thank you very much. I think that's also very appropriate. In my mind, it's one of these as Omar was kind of describing this checklist, there may be a base model for an ADU, and the checklist may be some of that customization. Do you want the tile roof, or you want a, you know, a comp roof, or whatever it may be? And that checklist would actually activate the inclusion of some of these other specialized sheets, a roofing sheet. Jim, I think the roofing is an easier issue to address than you think. Certainly there's differences and some engineering issues that, that need to come on some of these unique alterations. But I think that checklist is a good, to me, kind of a starting point. That some of the customization that, that would be made available, if it could be included off of that checklist, then you can slip in those additional sheets that need in order to make that done, in order to get, yeah, let's get 80% of them approvable and permittable without having to go out and get an architect, probably with the exception of some of the site work, because I can imagine not everybody's going to have a flat site. And you say, okay, just come in and pour a slab with a, you know, a curb in the foundation, and we're off and running. Hopefully that's helpful. Before we close off, I know this is not technically a public hearing item, but we do have a history. If there is anybody that has been listening in that would like to make a comment on this particular item, this will be the appropriate time, you know, to do that. So I'm going to open it up for public comment. And if the the facilitator on our Zoom meeting can help me, you know, basically asking if there's anybody out there in the public that either needs to raise their hand or the star nine, whatever it is, to be involved. As modest as it may be, here's an opportunity for the community to kind of, you know, speak their mind and give an opinion on what's really going on.
If any member of the public would like to speak on this, please raise your hand. Chair Martin, there are no raised hands.
Okay. I don't want to be said that we're not soliciting and, I mean, the involvement of the community on this. It's Zoom meeting is not the most efficient way of handling this, but this is the reality that we're living in. And I want to make sure that people have that opportunity, as, here again, as modest as it may be. Those are the comments that I have. Hopefully that's been very, very helpful. Do you guys have questions for us as commissioners to help focus some of the, you know, the work that you see ahead of you? Here again, it's not my intention. I think our intention to give you more work, but if there's something that we could do to help you, you know, get focused on what we're expecting you to do for the city of Rio Grande.
Yeah, no, thank you for all your comments. No, I like the comments of less work. That resonates. No, I think, you know, just keep in mind, you know, this is money given from the state to this regional program for the four cities. And while we're attempting to stock ADU plan, we are trying to customize it regionally so that these do fit and work as much as possible to the four cities. So I think these comments are both similar but also different than things we heard from Atascadero. Our team had also just wrapped up their Morro Bay presentation. So it'll be good to kind of get all these comments together and discuss further with the city's planning and building departments of how the cities best want to pull this project together, again, to help create housing in your cities, but also alleviate some of those burdens for your building departments, but also, you know, residents and costs too.
Very good.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I think probably fills this item for tonight.
Oh.
Once again, thank you very much for the work you've done. It's creative, and as our reality in the need that we have for affordable housing, this is great work, and I'm proud of the fact that we're participating in this, and we're going to be one of the, I think, the leading communities in the state rather than a real follower as we put together these plans. So that's exciting for me to be a participant in that. So once again, thank you very much. So that ends the conversation and for the non-public hearing item on the design concepts for our regional accessory dwelling units. The next item on our agenda is item 10, the notice of administrative items. I think there were two items on there. Any questions from fellow commissioners on those two items on the administrative decisions? Seeing none and hearing none, I'll just thank you for that then. Commission communications, any kind of comments that the commissioners, any of the commissioners would like to make as we wind down our meeting here tonight?
I'd like to wish everybody a Merry Christmas.
You too.
Absolutely. holiday greetings for anybody else and everybody else as well. Staff communications? Mr. President or Mr. Pedrotti?
I'll jump in here. So as the commission knows, every year the city puts on the Arroyo Grande Community Service Grant Program. The application period closed last Friday, and although we generally include it as a discussion item, it's formally agendized. We're hoping to get a volunteer that serves on the grant panel for that committee this evening. So if that's admissible by the committee, I'll provide a little bit of background and then we can have a quick discussion about who would want to volunteer for that position.
This is the grant program that was formerly known as the James Guthrie Community Grant Program. Is that correct?
Yes, formerly known as.
I believe that gives me an inherent conflict of interest, doesn't it?
I don't believe it does. I believe it gives you a grandfather into the founder of the idea. And yeah. I would always defer to, I would recommend James Guthrie. If he wants to do it, I think he deserves.
I'm willing to do it, but it is a great thing to participate in. So
yeah,
you know, if any of the rest of you would like to do it,
I did
it. It's okay with me.
it's very rewarding, and it's also somewhat stressful because you especially in years where you have to say no, or you know, it's. So, yeah.
If I may, I'll provide a little bit of background. You know, Commissioner Buchanan wasn't with us last year, but so this is an annual program where the city sets aside funds for nonprofit organizations that provide a direct benefit to residents in our community. This year, there is $82,065 available to be awarded. I think the past year was $50,000, but annually before that, prior to COVID and that pandemic, is around $25,000. So this year, the fund is supplemented by American Rescue Plan Act funds.
Great.
So the grant panel essentially review and consider each application on its own, make funding recommendations to council, who will ultimately confirm or alter those recommendations as they may. Time commitments probably 4 to 6 hours to review the applications and probably another 2 to 3 hours for the grant panel meeting in which you'll develop those recommendations. We anticipate having that grant panel meeting sometime in late January, maybe early February. So we'd ask for a primary and an alternate in case the primary designee is not able to attend.
Could I ask a technical question? I mean, this isn't on the agenda. Do we need to vote to put it on the agenda to meet any rules?
No, we're not making it. It wouldn't be a motion. So.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, I'll go on record as recommending Jim and anyone else who wants to do it. You're pointing at Andrew. You can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. On my screen, I'm pointing at Jim. I don't know what you guys have on your
screen. We all have different screens. So.
On my screen, Jamie, you better point up, okay?
That's the way we make most of our decisions, yeah.
Well, I agree with Frank. I think if Jim wants to do it, I think he should.
Sure. Okay. I'm willing.
Thank you, Jim. Yeah. Is there a backup, someone, if Jim is somehow incapacitated or leaves town to avoid having to attend the meeting? Is there someone else who's willing to step up and fill his shoes on that with that group?
I can do that.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Kevin, very much. So you got the names that you need there, Andrews?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Very good.
As part of staff communications too, I have something to add here too. Just want to say congratulations and introduce Andrew Perez as the new acting planning manager. And he's been a huge asset to the department. And it's coming at a really important time. You know, we've got some projects coming up, the general plan update, really important things that Andrew's going to be taking control of. And he's led us through some other important projects like the ADU ordinance and this project as well. So we're really excited to have him be the planning manager and work forward here.
Excellent. Congratulations, Andrew.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you all.
And with that, unless there's anything else, I'm going to adjourn this meeting. And once again, wish everybody a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. And
see you next year.
See you next year.
Yep.
See you next year. Have a good night.
Take care, everyone.